This is Profiles in Risk. Hosted by Nick Lamparelli. Every week, we interview those who risk life, limb, fortunes, career, and reputation, and those who work behind the scenes who look to protect and enlighten us about risk. You can find the show notes and other insurance-related content at insnerds.com. That's insnerds.com. Now, on to the show.
Welcome to Profiles in Risk. I am your host, Nick Lamparelli. Today, I am pleased to introduce Karin Saroya. Karin is the co-founder and CEO of Cover. Cover is a mobile insurance technology company whose primary product is a mobile application that takes in a picture of a property you want to insure, cars, homes, pets, jewelry, and connects you with insurance partners that you can get you the best price and coverage. Karin, welcome back.
Hey, Nick. Thanks for hosting.
I hope that was a good introduction to Cover. I think the first question for me to you is, what is Cover in your own words?
Sure. So you can think of Cover as a technology company with a national insurance brokerage bolted on top. You correctly described the product. Our customers download our apps via iOS and Android, take pictures and videos of things they want to insure. So literally walk us through their homes, give us 360 views of their cars, take pictures of their pets, jewelry, electronics, you name it. We've seen it coming through Cover. We're structured as a national insurance brokerage. We work with most national carriers or licensed across the country. In addition to selling insurance, we try our best to help our customers get the most out of their insurance policies. So that means is we build tools into our apps that are useful to our customers, irrespective of whether they buy insurance from us right away or not. And so what you'll see is, you know, a TensorFlow-based camera built into Cover that allows you to walk around your home, and Cover will auto-detect, identify, and catalog all your property and append it to your existing homeowner's policy, or if you don't have one, we'll sell you one. You know, we'll set up price drop alerts against your existing coverage. So if you've got a policy that's Progressive, we'll automatically market you on renewal or when a violation or accident drops off. And then other neat features like, if you pay via credit card, we'll extract the insurance policy in the card directly into Cover and make them usable policies. So it's really insurance plus services.
I really want to get into the technology aspect of it and what you're doing there, but you're an outsider as well coming into insurance. What were you doing before Cover?
Right. So prior to Cover, I built a consumer business in the high-end fashion space. So I built a business called StyleKick. We grew that to about 1 million users, about 15 million page views per month, and were eventually acquired into Shopify, where myself and my co-founders ran a mobile product team. So, you know, the folks that I work with, I've known forever, high school, we've been building products professionally together for about 5 years. Everything that we've ever built has been featured by Apple or Google, so we've built pretty beautiful things. We've driven millions of people to our apps in the past, so we have a pretty good sense of how to drive distribution on native mobile. Before I was in tech, I was an Oliver Wyman in their FS practice. I have a CFA, I went to MIT, studied financial economics. So it's pretty rare in the insure tech space to find people who have built, you know, consumer businesses to any meaningful scale in the past, and also understand insurance. We kind of sit at the intersection of those two things.
Yeah, which also means you bring a very unique perspective. So here you are, sort of outside of insurance, building technology on the consumer side. So what did you see? Where did the light bulb go off? What was the opportunity that you saw that you and your team decided to start Cover?
Right. So, you know, we were at Shopify, and Shopify is a great company. A great deal of respect for the management team, the senior product people there. But we still had the itch to continue building our own products. You know, we knew that the skill set we had in and around building mobile products, building mobile distributions, pretty rare. And so we were running hackathons on weekends, and we knew that we wanted to do something in mobile because of our prior skill set. So we built a bunch of different apps, actually. We built, a lottery app. We built something in the health space, ticketing apps. things that we thought could leverage our expertise in prior lives, across each of the co-founders. We settled on insurance after, we realized that, hey, we wanted to build a consumer business again, but the unit economics of that business needed to make sense. And it just so happened that I walked into a brokerage in Toronto where I'm from, saw that they were in prime financial district real estate, multiple floors of property amongst investment banks, consulting firms, private equity shops. And I was wondering how they could afford to do that. When I walked in, there was nobody working. and it was completely surprising to me. So I dug in a little bit on insurance, at least on the distribution side, and realized, hey, we could build products that don't exist in this space. We could acquire customers that a clip that far exceeded what a traditional brokerage or insurance entity could. And the economics were there to support it. And so when we first launched Cover, it was a very, very simple app. It was a couple of views on mobile leading directly to a camera view. And the premise and the preamble was effectively just take a picture of something you want to insure and we'll make a market for that risk. And lo and behold, people started sending us pictures of themselves washing their cars. They sent us pictures of their Christmas trees, like their valuables, their Xbox Ones. They would take selfies to get life insurance. They saw lots of kittens. That behavior took it a little bit further than we expected it to go. And it's really when you observe consumer behaviors that you do not expect that you double down. It's because, it's a non-obvious thing and we had uncovered something, a behavior that we thought we could build a business on top of.
That's really interesting. So I'm trying to think of what it must have been like at the early stages. So, what are you doing when someone sends you a Christmas tree or a game box? Like, how do you even put that marketplace together? First, you have to understand what it is that they're sending you. So you must have been building the technology to try to figure out what's in this picture. But then you have to put the marketplace together. You actually have to find carriers that would be willing to insure those things. So could you walk us through a little bit of how you stitch together both scaling and the technology, but also the marketplace?
Right, sure. So I guess I could talk about both sides. We can start with the consumer demand side. It's not actually necessary to build anything that's particularly technologically intensive to support that behavior. You can do things that don't scale for quite some time until you get to a scale that we absolutely need to build, computer vision technology into your product. So you can quite literally have a human looking at the property and then, trying to place that business with a carrier or, with a warranty provider or what have you, what product would be applicable to that particular request. So, things that don't scale is the way to do it on the demand side. You really just want to prove that the demand is there and continue to scale it. Then you can build technology to automate and support, whatever process you think you need to. On the supply side, with insurance companies, I think we were just super lucky in that we were able to stand up a national insurance brokerage in something like 8 months. Getting access to insurance carrier appointments is not easy. It's a non-trivial thing to do. And so we were definitely, both lucky, but, the team is pretty hardworking and presented a pretty compelling vision to most of our carrier partners. And this is both on the insurance and the warranty side. I think none of what we did is easy. it was a challenge, but we got through it.
Well, to build something like that takes funding. You recently successfully completed a Series A, but before that, you need to hire staff. Just the brokerage element of it probably costs tens of thousands of dollars, if not $100,000, to get licensed in every state. So, could you walk us through you as management and trying to control your runway and cash flow and your fundraising? Could you kind of walk the audience through what that's like?
Sure. So, we could start in the very early days. We actually started our company as part of Y Combinator. We applied more or less with an idea to the program, and we're lucky enough to receive a couple hundred grand or $120K as part of the program. It's not easy to get into YC. The admit rates are pretty low, and so it was really important for us to clearly articulate the vision and direction the company was going in, and to start to formulate some of the metrics that, you know, we were going to use to support our thesis. And so during YC, you know, we didn't do any of this licensing stuff. We knew that we only had to prove one thing, and that thing was that we could acquire customers and insurance. It, you know, customer acquisition and insurance is the lifeblood of the rest of the business. Everything is a moot point if you cannot, if you can't get a customer in the door and satisfy their request with a, you know, a product that is appropriately priced and provides the coverage that's necessary for that customer. And so we started as a lead gen business, and you know, we launched Cover. We were lucky enough to be featured on the front page of the App Store, you know, actually like 4 weeks after we launched. All of a sudden we had tens of thousands of customers coming in the door nonstop. I kid you not, a new lead like every second. It was insane. And so what we had done was we validated the first piece. And the first piece was that, you know, native mobile was a viable, you know, pipe. It was a big enough pipe to support a very large business. And so, you know, having proven that, we could now go out and expand on this thesis. And we wanted to take over more of the customer interaction, more of the customer journey, and develop a more intimate relationship with each one of our customers who inevitably spend quite a bit of money with us. And so we moved on. We raised a little bit more money. You know, we got licensed across the country. We then kicked off you know, the process to get appointed you know, across most major carriers, and off we went. So you have to take things in sequence. You're really just looking at what is it that I can prove in a resource-constrained way that gives me some indication that I'm on the path to a very large business, and then communicate that very clearly. It's super important.
Okay, so you're an insurtech company. I'm going to ask you two questions. I'll start with this one first. Mm-hmm. What is the fundamental problem with insurance that makes mm-hmm. a company like Cover and the folks that are supporting you believe that you can be successful in insurance?
Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. So you know, I think that the block and tackle stuff is done terribly in insurance. Insurance is a consumer product. It has, the experience in and around that product has never been developed as such. And so I'll give you an example, right? Like non-standard companies that preemptively send out cancellation notices, you know, 10 days ahead of when they expect a payment being due. Non-standard companies saving our passwords in plain text. Preferred companies canceling policies because they're not able to get a customer on the phone after the first attempt. You know, preferred companies not having simple things like, you know, integrations with raters. None of these guys have payments APIs. None of them have pricing APIs. They're not instrumented to deal with a customer that is you know, going to be accustomed or is now accustomed to brand new distribution channels, i.e. native mobile, i.e. you know, much richer mobile web experiences. So the block and tackle stuff is done very poorly. And it's not like it's their fault, right? Like we talked about this before. These insurance companies are, you know, you can think of them as glaciers that are carved by rivers of money, right? They're built on AS/400. They cannot move because they've just been accustomed to the way they've been doing business forever. So that presents, you know, that actually presents a unique opportunity to folks like ourselves who are very, very nimble on the front end, can eventually move into taking over more of the value, I guess moving down the value chain to improve this block and tackle stuff. So that's insurance, you know. Problems well, with insurtech. Sorry.
Yeah, let me go into that. First of all, the glaciers insurance as a glacier carved with rivers of money might be the greatest quote I've ever heard about the insurance industry. I will definitely make that the title of this podcast, because that in and of itself explains, is such a metaphor, explains everything. So now let me jump into insurtech. Mm-hmm. What is the fundamental problem with insurtech that you think you don't have?
Okay. So this is my second go around at building a business. And I think we are no longer making the same mistakes that we used to, right? Like I think everything is compost. And sometimes, you know, your initial business is just very expensive tuition. The issues with insurtechs, generally speaking, are the same issues that most startup technology companies experience, right? They either raise too much money, they hire too quickly, they track vanity metrics, they don't launch fast enough, they don't consumer validate that people actually want their products. And because of that, they die, you know, pretty quickly. And I think YC is, you know, the YC ethos is effectively validate consumer demand, track something, make sure that thing is growing, don't spend your money, don't hire too quickly. And you can see that across InsurTech right now. There are way too many companies that haven't shown enough traction that have raised way too much money. And I think, you know, there'll be a little bit of a shaking out there. It's going to be the ones that are solidly focused on their customer, improving the experiences, you know, through their products, making sure that they're focusing on what actually drives value to the end consumer that are going to live, you know, longer than the next couple of years. So InsurTech is not special. No, it's not any different from, you know, it's not infallible, even though there's lots of money in the space. It's no different from other tech companies.
I find it really interesting, you know, when some of these insurtech companies raise a lot of money, they get a lot of publicity, and it almost seems like the folks that are writing the articles, whether they're, you know, online or in print, are almost equating the amount of money that they've raised with some level of success. Like in and of itself, it becomes a success metric. You're indicating that that's the opposite. Could you explain our audience skews a little bit to the younger side? So part of the goal of the podcast is to help them understand folks like you and why you're doing the things you're doing and how you're doing them. Explain the problem with raising too much money too quickly.
Well, you've got to deploy it, right? And if you haven't actually found product market fit, you're wasting money, right? You're hiring people that, you know, you're not fully utilizing. You're trying to acquire customers that are inevitably not going to transact with you. You haven't proven out the unit economics. And the unit economics of this business are important, right? You can't be spending $30 to acquire $1 of premium, which is something you actually see in InsurTech right now. That never shakes out. That will never lead to a viable going concern for you. And so those things are, you know, those things need to be in the back of your mind. You are trying to build a viable business. Venture is intended to amplify, you know, a successfully validated consumer premise. That's what it's intended to do. It's not intended to solve any other problems. You can raise money, and I think so long as you're cognizant, you know, if it's opportunity, you can raise money opportunistically, but you have to remember that at the end of the day, people got to buy what you're selling. You have to be able to make sure that the margins there support your business is a great concern. And that you're using that cash, to solve discrete problems that you've identified and articulated very, very clearly. So to execute, money is not going to save a shitty business at the end of the day.
Well, the insurance has this other problem in that on one side of the equation, it's incredibly capital intensive. Mm-hmm. So I find it interesting. I'd like to get your opinion on this. I've written about it a few times. Mm-hmm. Anyone that's going in, and it's a risk-bearing business. So generally, you go in one form or another. You're either on the carrier side, where you're actually taking the risk, or you're more on the distribution side, where you're sort of finding it, packaging it. But at the end of the day, someone else is actually taking the risk, and you're taking a cut. You're on the distribution side of things. So two questions. One is, do you have an interest of being a risk-bearing entity at some point? And the second question is, why did you choose the route that you've taken now if you're not going to be risk-bearing?
Right. So I think you're right. I mean, most insurtechs are going to exist along this continuum of pure distribution business, perhaps an MGA that underwrites risk and syndicates out the risk or seeds the risk via a fronting carrier relationship. Or ultimately, you know, moves in the direction of a Metromile, where, you know, they're now the risk-bearing entity for the most part. We started as a pure distribution business simply because it's the most capital efficient way to start in this business. We don't hold any regulatory capital. We don't take balance sheet risk. We are, you know, one block of this business. Our intention is to move down downstream, and it's really not to step on the toes of our partners. It's we have a unique opportunity to identify gaps in the market with respect to product offerings that are available through the independent agency channel. So I'll give you an example. We work for 30 different carriers across the country. None of them are particularly geared towards younger drivers. They are focused on folks who are 40 plus, have a home, multiple cars, life insurance policy, umbrella policy. They shy aggressively away from folks who are 22 to 30 years old with a college degree, who are upwardly mobile, accumulating assets, improving their credit scores, and eventually will end up in the preferred segment. And we recognize that, as a tech company that focuses on mobile, we can acquire those customers in droves, and we're going to deliver the experience that those customers expect. Do we have an insurance product that fits very neatly for that particular mold? No. In that case, we would design one ourselves, stand it up, and have it, as part of our portfolio of possible insurance products that fit the needs of our customers. So the expectation on our end is yes, we're going to end up taking risk. That it's very likely that the first step in is going to be the fronting carrier partnership because, again, it's capital efficient. And then as we prove out the economics further, it's possible, right, that we go buy an insurance shell and we continue in that way. But you can think of it this way. This is no different from us validating everything else in the way that we have, right? So one step at a time, in the direction of what we think we need to do to own our own destiny.
Yeah, I almost think that the MGA approach is the minimum viable product for the risk taking. And whether you ultimately take it or not is, sort of a business decision. But mm-hmm. I think there are insurtech startups that have jumped into the carrier side first. And to me, it's a big head scratcher because they haven't sold a product. They're taking risk, and it's so capital intensive. They basically have VC money sitting in treasury bonds just to get the thing up and running. Whereas in what you're describing, it's you can kind of prove everything out without actually having to take the risk and basically leverage the balance sheet of someone else that can take advantage of it.
Yeah, this is true. I mean, what those companies are doing is like, again, they haven't demand validated. They haven't designed a product they've proven out yet that people actually care about or interact with. They're taking advantage of an arbitrage opportunity that's available. Basically, they raise venture at a very high multiple and are building businesses that are inherently low multiple businesses, 1.5x as an insurance business without building any supporting technology or anything that differentiates themselves really. So it's an arbitrage. These arbitrages close. We're very laser thing out a technology company that supports, the sale is one step at a time.
Hey, Karn, you broke up there a little bit. Can you hear me?
What was the last... Yeah, hey, how's it going? What was the last thing you heard?
The last thing I heard was companies that are taking high multiple money and converting it into low multiple businesses, and then it kind of broke up.
Right. The last piece was, we're focused on building a technology company that supports the sale of insurance. And it is fundamentally a technology company over and above an insurance entity.
Yep. Well, we've gone almost a half an hour in, and we actually didn't go into the technology very much. And so I want to touch upon the picture taking element and aspect of it. I didn't ask this in the agenda that you and I talked about before the program started, but I'm curious. Like that's a heavy duty technology. It's like image recognition and everything like that. Right now, can you describe like how much of it is still being done by humans? How much is it being done by technology? How much machine learning is a part of this? What does that element of your business and technology look like today?
Right. So you know, we capture videos and pictures because we view ourselves as a sophisticated frontline underwriter, right? We are interested in knowing that the property exists in a given time, place, and condition, even if we cannot pass that information to our you know, less capable insurance partners from a technological point of view. What it does is, though, it sets us up to be able to take advantage of these pieces of information that other insurance companies can't. And so when I think about, you know, what edge we have from a technical point of view, it is simply, you know, access to social, financial, and basic telematics data that other folks really aren't leveraging. The computer vision aspect of what we do is super interesting. I mean, it's empowering to the user because, you know, it removes the need for an adjuster who may be completely off base to step in the case that you need to make a claim. That property you know existed, you know, claims can be filed far more and actually resolved far more quickly than they otherwise would be. You know, you can port the models that we've started to train on TensorFlow from home to car, and so you can with the iPhone 10, for example, you can spatially reason out you know, insides of homes, but also surface level events and identify damage. As it stands, you know, the only human element that's involved, you know, post using our TensorFlow-based camera is, you know, if we see multiple hits on very high valuable items, so, you know, jewelry, you know, laptops, fine art, things like that. It's really when the agent steps in or somebody on our side steps in and says, "Hey, you may be above the sublimits of your existing policy, and we want to make sure that you're adequately insured." But outside of that, it's pretty self-steered.
No, that's really interesting. What's the hardest part of start? You've started two companies, maybe more. You know, you've really been dabbling as an entrepreneur. For the audience members that are listening, that, you know, have that desire someday to be their own boss, they feel like they have an entrepreneurial itch. What's the hardest part in getting a company up and running?
Right. So I think the answer is pretty standard, really. If you leave a decent job, you're taking pretty significant financial and career risk to create something from nothing, with little or no indication as to whether you will succeed. So again, this is my second go at it. But what I can honestly say is that my risk reward mechanism might be a little bit different from other folks, in that I view not, you know, doing this, not waking up every day and crafting what I think should exist, as an existential risk. I think I have to be doing this. And there are definitely people out there that feel the same way. You just need to get yourself into a position where you can act on that feeling.
Yeah, that's really good advice. So where do you see Cover in 5 years? We've had several guests on the show that have talked that have a lot of seniority in insurance, and they've never seen anything like the last 5 years. Rapid change. I'm kind of assuming that's not going to change, that it's the volatility of new products, new technology. There's just a lot of stuff flying at us now. So even companies like Cover probably need to stay on their toes. So if you glance out 5 or 10 years, where is Cover? What is Cover doing? You know, explain where you kind of see this path leading towards.
Right. So I alluded to this earlier, but I think what it means is, you know, owning more of our own destiny. It's going to be a requirement for us to build what we think should exist, you know, to have some of our own products and actually move into this hybrid model of owning a national brokerage and standing up products where we find significant market gaps. That means standing up insurance products with nice new APIs on top of them, such that any technically sophisticated distributor could work with us directly. You know, it means that we continue to identify opportunities that are, you know, opportunistically and from an arbitrage opportunity to distribute outside of our apps. You know, whether that's a point of sale, you know, whether that is, you know, a variety of different, you know, channels that we could explore that exist outside of mobile. So long as we're designing, you know, things that support the seamless table stakes front end experiences down to simplifying underwriting. Things like using proxies for credit rather than discriminating against, inherently discriminating against folks with lower incomes, in particular zip codes. There's quite a bit to be done. And I think this is Beijing. It's one step at a time. As we continue to knock down distribution, we're going to think about expanding the scope of what we do.
Yeah, that's definitely worthwhile. So I'm gonna look forward to covering you in 5 years and seeing where you stand on that. So I want to get a little personal now and talk about you. You're not that old, but you've done a few things. But if you could go back to your, college self that's just graduating, and unsure of the world and what you're going to be doing, what kind of advice would you give your 21-year-old self?
Sure. I think I would say save more money. Don't go to grad school. and learn to code earlier. I think those are the things that I would have done.
Okay. So I was surprised not go to grad school. Why not?
I mean, if you take a look at market returns in the last 9 years, I could have invested my entire tuition and, being much happier, with the financial outcome. But I also think, so I went to MIT, studied finance. I don't really do anything that's particularly related to that anymore. It's fine from a pedigree point of view, and I think there are quite a number of very smart people that I learned from. But there is no replacement, there is no substitute, at least in entrepreneurship, from just jumping right in, getting started, building something, right? What I've learned over the course of the last little while is probably should have started even earlier, because where you end up is nowhere near where you started, and given enough time, I think you eventually gravitate to the right answer, at least the right answer that's right for you.
Yeah, I would guess your entrepreneurial experience was grad school plus.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're running this company. It's got a team that you have to manage. You have investors you have to report to.
Right.
A lot of stuff flying around. How do you stay productive? Are there any tools, technologies, or tips that you have found helpful in your personal life that really work for you?
Sure. So I think the answer is pretty low tech, right? I don't use anything that's any more sophisticated than the Notes app on your iPhone, right? I have to-do lists, and I make sure that I knock out everything that I need to do that's on those to-do lists. And believe it or not, I found that to be the number one productivity hack. I've tried a lot of things. Setting up Trello boards for myself, a variety of different pieces of software, but nothing has come close to beating a simple to-do list.
Have you always had the self-discipline to just do the to-do list? I guess it works if you have the self-discipline, were you able to teach yourself that?
It's actually a really lightweight thing to do, right? It's like, something comes up in a conversation, you jot it down on a notepad, that notepad lives across your devices, and eventually it needs to be resolved, right? It doesn't fall by the wayside. I'm not sure if it requires all that much resolve. I think it needs to become reflexive, effectively.
Okay, so how do you prioritize then? So what if your to-do list is 100 deep? What's the Karn methodology to ranking those, knowing you're going to get the most important stuff done first?
Right. So I'm scanning it every day, right? And if things are high priority, they just sit at the top of the list. If they're lower priority, they sit at the bottom. Pretty simple.
Yeah, cool. Good advice. Yeah. So I always ask all of my guests, I'm a big book reader. A lot of our audience are book readers. A lot of our audience are hungry for more knowledge, and they learn about books just from this podcast. So I'm curious as to whether there have been any books that have been influential personally, spiritually, or business-wise.
Sure. So I'm not sure about influential. I read a lot as well. And I think I, 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 you know, take different things, like, you know, parts of books, parts of the thesis is underlying, you know, theses, I guess, underlying some of these things. But I would say, you know, stuff I've read recently that's, you know, been helpful to me, Never Split the Difference, a book on negotiation by Chris Voss. Really, really good. Especially if you're negotiating term sheets or doing any sort of BD, there's some gold in there. You know, on the fiction side, I really enjoyed reading Ready Player One. It's a little bit of a dystopian future epic, but since you can kind of project out from the current state of technology to seeing something like that manifest. And then, you know, stuff by Steinbeck, Grapes of Wrath. I enjoy getting out of you know, business reading, and so end up reading quite a bit of fiction.
I will make sure that we get those on the show notes. I'm pretty sure everyone has heard of The Grapes of Wrath. If not, shame on you. Well, we've come to the end of the podcast. So how can people, Karn, how can people reach you?
Sure. You can email me, just karn@cover.com. Or you can connect with me on Twitter, just @KarnSaroya. KarnSaroya.
My guest this week has been Karn Saroya of Cover. Karn, thank you so much for being on the show.
Yeah, thanks, Nick, for hosting me. I appreciate it.
Best of luck with everything.
Thanks. Cheers.
Cheers.